You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Ben Sternke, and I'm here with my co-hosts today, Christy Penley and Matt Tebbe. Friends, how are you today?
Hey, wait, is your name Good. Benjamin?
It is, yeah. That's my full name.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Ben is normally nicknamed, but Matthew, yeah. Benjamin, do you want to guess my full name?
Christopher. No?
No. Try again.
Christopoulos.
No. Come on. Third time's a charm. Last guess.
Christa Quincha. Christina.
Christina.
Not Christina.
Christine.
Christine. You got it.
Christine.
You got it. Christine Lynn
I knew
Penley.
A Christine. The last Christine I knew was in eighth grade. I went to grade school with her. I went to a Lutheran grade school, and she was the daughter of the principal.
Oh,
Christine. Okay. Anyway, I won't say her last name, just, you know, for privacy. Yeah,
privacy.
I don't know. She probably doesn't listen to this podcast. Well, good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Matt, how are you doing?
How am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm good. You know, these ADHD medication that I'm on is working.
Yeah.
Yay.
If you're focused.
Yeah, because you said, you said privacy.
Uh-huh.
And I filtered out like three privacy jokes.
Yeah.
And it just good over work. And over again.
That's awesome.
It's incredible.
Telling us what jokes you're, you know, I think the ADHD medicine is working, but still.
No, it's working. I got to champion myself.
All right. I'll champion
if
you.
If I can't
well.
Celebrate
go,
me,
Matt.
Who will?
Way to go,
Thank
Matt.
Thank you.
We'll celebrate you.
You know, speaking of Christy and Christine, we have someone in our church, a sound seeker named Celestine.
Yes.
And that's his full name.
Mm-hmm.
And his abbreviated name, like his nickname, is Celeste.
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Which
that's your,
is also my
right,
daughter's
right,
name.
Right.
Your daughter's full name. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's her full name. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. We were making Christopher jokes with Christy, and I just realized a lot of the things we consider to be sort of like essential, like Christopher is definitely a dude name.
Right.
How do you know?
Yeah. I know a man.
Celestine.
I know a man named Christy.
Christy, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Like, apparently, you know, most of the time it's like Aaron or Alex or Ryan or Kelly. Like, those are kind of...
Bob, Dick, Harry.
Anyway, apparently Christy can be a male name.
Or Shannon.
Yeah.
Shannon can be a male name.
Shannon, Kelly. I have a friend named Kelly. It's a man.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go.
Interesting times.
Hey, I was just thinking about this, guys. I'm having... I don't read as much as I used to or want to. I think it's a season of life kind of thing for me. But I was wondering what you guys were reading.
Like a lazy one?
Like a lazy season of life. No, I don't think so anyway. But
you're doing other good things.
I am doing other. I'm cooking for my family.
Hey.
Like yeah. 4 or 5 nights a week. So, you know,
that's big.
That's a good hour and meal planning and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, we don't need to dive into that. I was saying that because I'm interested in what books you guys are reading right now that you're enjoying.
Yeah. I'm reading this book called Fully Known by Mo Aiken. Mm-hmm. And it's basically about, she likens like intimacy with God mm-hmm. with like human intimacy and even sexuality. It's really fascinating. She did this whole, you know, chapter on pornography and masturbation and like, and then how like the lies people believe when active in that. Yeah. Is similar to ways that we would treat God. And anyway, I'm not doing a great job explaining it, but it has been really fascinating to read. Yeah, yeah, it's been really good. So I've appreciated that book.
Interesting.
I realize I did not do a good. People who are listening are like, wait, I'm going to look that book up. What is happening?
Well, but you did a great sales job then. Apparently, looking it right up. So. Mm-hmm. Okay. Matt, how about you? What's a book you're enjoying lately? You're reading right now.
Well, the Bible.
Good. Bible Jude Christie.
It's the only,
always do
it's
that.
Only book, the B-I-B-L-E. Let's see. Which one do I want to name? I will name The Wisdom of Your Body by Hillary McBride.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to be on the podcast. This is like a little teaser. Yeah. Reading a book that she wrote about our bodies and embodiment and how reclaiming our bodies as sacred and holy and as not something distinct from our minds or our soul. And she tells her story of healing her relationship to her body. And I, you know, I a couple years ago, I had a kairos of like the negative talk that I, the negative ways I script my body. And I sat down one morning. Instead of drinking coffee that morning, I crushed the beans up and snorted them. And I just wrote down, I had to really psych myself up for this. I wrote down every single narrative about my body that I could think of that I tell myself. And I filled up like a page and a half of it. And I was like, none of this is positive. None of this is positive. You know, I'm an able-bodied person. I feel like I don't have any debilitating diseases or what we consider deformities. And still I have all this negative talk about my body. Anyway, I'm hoping Hillary can straighten me out. I'm a mess.
Very good.
I love your vulnerability and honesty. Mm. Like you are the same on this podcast as you are in real life.
Yeah.
And I just mean like, I am so thankful for you and for that. And I think we need to hear that. Like there is practices maybe of even writing out what are the lies I'm believing about this situation, in this case, your body,
that thanks, I think Christy. Now is I'm convicted. Really powerful. I do need to say that I lied just now.
Yes.
I did not snort coffee grounds. Okay, just making sure.
I think we assumed that was a joke.
Yeah,
but still.
Yeah. But this book is it's really good, and I'm looking forward to. Yeah. We're going to speak with Hillary in a week or so. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
A few.
It's good. Ben, are you reading anything that you're like, yay?
Yeah.
I know you said that you're doing a lot of other things, so maybe
no. I am. I just don't read. I'm still reading the same amount of books at a time. I just read them slowlier. Slowlier. I just read them slower. So I'm really liking one of the books I'm reading right now is I'm slowly making my way through Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. She's a really gifted storyteller and makes a lot of these like statistics and sort of ideas come to life. That's a really helpful book.
Ben, when you have margin or time.
That's one of them.
I've got a couple others, Boston Review. Yeah. Long form reviews of that book.
Oh, I think I have that saved. Yeah. There's a critique of the book. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you know,
I'm interested to read it.
Angie Ward's to read it. New book.
Always want to be learning stuff. Mm-hmm. Curated links. Oh, yeah, Angie Ward. We got to get to her. But friends, let me just quickly give you our essential blurbs here. If you are not on our curated links email list, you can go to gravityleadership.com/join to join us. You become part of our online community. It's completely free. We send out an email every Friday with just some links that we found helpful. If you're in leadership of any kind in today's culture, trying to navigate all those kinds of issues, sign up, join us, gravityleadership.com/join. Also, our podcast is sponsored by Gravity Leadership Academy, which is our 12-month online coaching and training practice that we do. Sorry, I can't think of the word. It's our training, what is it? Intensive, that's what we call it. Our training intensive. So we're always starting new groups. So if you're interested in that, gravityleadership.com/academy. And reach out, and one of us can have a chat with you about whether or not it's right for you.
Boom, so. Boom, boom.
I got six people who are interested.
Yes.
So we have Christy, got one or two more. Like, we'll start it in like a
if
week.
If you
or two.
Want Christy to be your coach, you might want to sign up. You might want to sign up right now because she's going to start a new cohort. All right. Those are the blurbs. Now we can get into Angie Ward. She's been on the podcast before. We talked to her about her book, I Am a Leader, about women leading in the church and elsewhere. And this book is one that she edited. She's the general editor of When the Universe Cracks, Living as God's People in Times of Crisis. It's a book filled with essays from different leaders, including Ephraim Smith and Matt Michalatos and Sean Gladding, et cetera, et cetera. But we had a great conversation just with her about sort of the cultural unrest and the cultural sort of earthquakes that are happening right now, as well as the pandemic and everything that's revealed, and this book that she was able to pull together about how to be God's people in these times of crisis. So it's good.
She's the real deal.
Interview.
She's
great.
Like one of my professors
at
Denver Seminary, and she is the real deal. So. Yeah.
I
appreciate her. So it's good. It's a good interview.
It was, and it is, and we should get into it.
Yep.
Here we go. Angie Ward, welcome back to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah. We interviewed you before about your book, I Am a Leader, When Women Discover the Joy of Their Calling. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But we're interviewing you about another book today. But first of all, a little bit about you. Here's what I know about you, Angie. Mm-hmm. You have over 30 years of ministry experience. This is what the Bible says.
I was gonna say, you
as
do?
A leader, as a writer, as a teacher, as an author, and you're currently the associate director of the Doctor of Ministry program at Denver Seminary,
woohoo!
Overseeing Christie's D-Men studies, right?
That's right.
This is like a fun meeting in a different context for you two then.
Very cool. And she likes basketball.
Oh.
I do.
Who's your team? I forget who your team is.
North Carolina University. Tar Heels.
The Tar Heels. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, very good. I was going to ask, what else we need to know about you. So Tar Heels fan, what else should we know about Angie Ward?
Ooh, Christy, what else should they know about me? you got to know me a little
You run.
Bit,
so. You're a runner.
I am a runner. Very good.
Okay.
Last time I did this with y'all, I'm not sure I was doing it. I think we were still living in Indianapolis area.
Yep.
So we've moved here a year and a half ago for me to take this role at Denver Seminary. So yeah, we're empty nesters living the life in Denver, and runner, reader, writer, teacher, Christy. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Love and sports.
Honestly,
love Disney
really
cruises.
Disney cruises. But I just need to say this because I need women in my life as role models, and that is what Angie is to me. Mm-hmm. She loves people so well and she loves Jesus and she pushes me to be better. And that is like a real gift. And so I'm really thankful for you. I'm really excited to be on here to do this conversation, to have this conversation. But for all of our listeners, you know, there are people in your life that you're like, yeah, they help me. They inspire me. They push me and make me better. That's who you are. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome.
Christy can't go a podcast, it seems like, without encouraging somebody. So she regularly leaves little messages for Matt and I, encouraging us. So anyway, it's great having Christy on the podcast for that reason alone, and many others. Well, today we're talking about, this new book that you edited. You're the general editor of, When the Universe Cracks, Living as God's People in Times of Crisis, which is kind of a sweeping, multifaceted look at the role of crisis in the life of faith, from a whole bunch of pastors and faith leaders and experts. And it was inspired by the global pandemic, which, you know, I think everybody's heard of by now. So we don't need to go into that. Yeah. But these writers are examining kind of the history of God's people and offering a fresh perspective on what it means to live as God's people and to lead in times of crisis. So you were the editor of this book. I think most people understand what that is, but like, what does the process of editing and curating a book of essays like this, like, what is that like?
Yeah, I think it's really fun. So I, with the help of our, kind of my editor, the publisher of NAB Press, David Zimmerman, they kind of envisioned this Kingdom Conversations series. So this is actually the first in a series. And the next one I got to tell you is also going to be great. It's called Kingdom and Country. I just got to tell you that. Yeah.
Right. Are you editing that one too?
I am. And I'm just finishing up the manuscript for that one right now. So that's good. But Dave Zimmerman and I, we sit down and talk through kind of, okay, what are the 10 chapters that we want and kind of the focus and flow overall throughout that. And then we go, okay, who are the voices we want to write each of those? And so then we start approaching each of them and kind of casting vision. So it's my job to kind of bring harmony to the whole thing.
Interesting.
And then I'm kind of, and so shepherding everybody through that process and their deadlines. We also, it's very fun. We get the contributors together on a Zoom so they all get to meet each other, which is kind of cool. So it's not just a very disjointed, everybody send me their chapter kind of thing. It is kind of trying to set the little sense of unity among the group for that too. So.
It seems like it would take a unique skill set to herd 10 authors into deadlines and, you know, and various points of unity among all that diversity.
It does. I'm my personality, I think I'm a border collie, so I like bringing structure to things and just like organizing things. Yeah. Christy knows this from the work I do with Denver Seminary. So
she's known as the thesis whisperer. She does that for all of our dissertations it's good.
Yeah, so I get to, so bringing them together in 10 different writing styles and deadlines or, you know, ways they approach the writing process.
Right.
You know, it's interesting kind of to learn from each of them about that as well. And so some are like, sending me a take immediately and go, oh, I'll just rewrite the whole thing. And others are like, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? You know, and others are like, when was that due? So
shoot.
Yeah.
I thought it was due in October. Good. What is your hope for this book then? I know you said it's the first in kind of a series of Kingdom conversations. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk a little bit about the vision for that whole series and what your hope is specifically for this book.
Yeah. So NAB Press is the publisher and they, you know, this book first came out of, maybe we should write a book about the pandemic, but then went, let's make this a broader thing with multiple voices and this idea of kind of conversations that multiple voices in the book, and then that we need to be having conversations about these kind of things. And NAB Press, Navigators being very much a discipleship focused ministry, NAB Press really wants to be a discipleship publisher.
Okay.
And so the vision for the series, this book and the series, is that type of focus. So it's not just kind of a four views, like, what do we think about this kind of thing? It's not it's very much everybody has kind of a, even if the ones who are like expert in history or sociology or whatever, they all very much come with kind of a pastoral discipleship focused first and foremost. And so the focus is on that. Like, what does this mean for us as followers of Christ individually and collectively?
Yeah. Okay. Well, looking at this book and, you know, thinking about kind of leading and what it means to lead right now, I was reminded of a quote that, I don't know, it's become very popular because of the times we're living in, but it's from Lord of the Rings. And it's Frodo, you know, sort of, he has this ring and he's got to go into the fires of Mount Doom. And it's this, he doesn't want to do this. You know, like he didn't ask for this. He's like, why do I have to save the world? And he tells Gandalf the wizard, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." And then Gandalf replies, "So do I, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to do is decide what to do with the time that is given to us." Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about that. And, you know, like you said, this book was inspired largely by these events in 2020. But it's not just about the pandemic. So it's not just like, hey, what just happened to us? It's about kind of how crisis in general and how we respond to it kind of shapes our faith. And so I wonder if you can comment on that. Like, what are the ways in which this pandemic and the ways that we've responded to it, how has it brought a perspective that has been needed perhaps in the role of crisis kind of in general in the life of faith?
Yeah, well, you know, as we're all experiencing it, and honestly, when I was editing this book, I was hoping and thinking maybe this the pandemic thing would all be past us, you know, and but it just upends, you know, we're still living in this, right? It upends everything. Yeah. And I think we kind of think we should be advanced. So at some point we'll become advanced enough in the society that we don't have these things anymore. Like it's a reminder, I guess, of our fragility, you know, and just that we can't progress our way past these types of things, whether it's political unrest or you know, systemic, you know, endemic things like racism and, you know, health things. Like 100 years ago, my grandfather left the University of Wisconsin in Madison, Wisconsin, to go home to work on the farm because of the flu influenza epidemic.
Oh, really?
And now, so 100 years later now, my two sons had to leave Indiana University because of this thing that we thought we could get past, you know, so it kind of, it really does kind of pull the rug out from us and force us to fall back and, well, what just happened? And these are the continuing things, not just health, you know, the pandemic, but these are just ongoing things through history around the world. We can't choose. We think we can choose and avoid, and we really can't. So I think it's a reminder of that. So
there's the dog. Yep.
I
we commented on this. Yep.
Kids
before
must be coming
the kids
home.
Are coming home. Yep. It's usually what happens around.
Yeah.
Or somebody's walking past.
I mean, and so that upending and that disequilibrium though is where we all can experience growth. I mean, you know, and so that's what it does to us. It just upends us individually, societally, in our local communities and friendships. And of course we don't like that. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one thing I hear you alluding to is like, I do think we can get under the thrall of the sort of the technological dream of modern life, right? Mm-hmm. That once we get to a state of sufficient advancement technologically, then like we'll be able to fix everything. Everything will have some sort of fix to it. Everything will have some way that we can just deal with it or stop it or, you know, pay enough money to like get rid of it or, you know, that kind of a thing. And so some of what I hear you saying there is that it does return us, I think, to some of the roots of our faith. For me, at least, like I'm noticing more and more, you know, the certain kinds of psalms after this pandemic and everything that else that's gone on with it, concurrently with it, I've noticed a lot of the psalms that I think I breezed past the psalms that said like, bring justice, oh God, like, you know, those kinds of things that I was just like, I knew that was part of the faith, but those psalms didn't grab me. Now they're grabbing me, you know, because I've gone through this thing that's like, oh, I can't easily get rid of this, easily fix this. And I think some of the essays deal quite well with that, you know, in this book. Why would you say it is important for, I mean, sometimes this is called the problem of suffering or the problem of evil, you know, that kind of thing. Why is it so important for us to engage faithfully with this, both personally, but also kind of in a cultural sense?
Well, I think you go back to scripture. I think God wants us, not just what we can do for him, you know? And so this causes us to, again, pause that and could stop our, you know, up into the left, right, whatever trajectory, you know, kind of thing. And I think there's times where, we need to just return to him, you know, and I think Joanne Lyon does a great job of that in her essay in the book, just about the importance of lament and coming back together as community. Yes. I mean, it's reminded all of us, I think, of what's really important, what really matters. And the thing that's been unique, at least about the COVID pandemic, is that it's affected everyone. Like, you can't buy your way out of it. You know, you can't blame it on, well, this is because of somebody's bad behavior, or if only they had something, you know. So I think it reminds us, it reminded me of our mind, smallness in the universe, and God's overall, I just think of Job a lot as like, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? You know, it's given me, I think, a needed perspective and going, okay, what's really important? You know, I missed major sporting events less than I thought, you know, it's like, I got to spend more time with people. You know, there's things that slowed me down, you know, and the accompanying crises, like there was a political, you know, things and social upheaval. So I think it's part of our formation, you know, to have to come back to this, and it's not just one big evangelical victorious.
Kind of life. Totally.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission, and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
I just am thinking about our listeners and how there is this underlying tiredness of you know, the cracks within our world, within their lives, within, you know, our nation and all of this kind of thing. And so, I the hope is that they would be encouraged that God is at work. God is present and working and doing something, even in the midst of the chaos, and bringing that brokenness and kind of using it ultimately to teach and to grow and to form, which sometimes I just need that perspective shift, right? I get stuck in the chaos rather than having a different perspective. So just kind of what I'm thinking, if someone's listening thinking like, I'm still there, like, you know, what does it look like to kind of look up and see God as our helper type mentality?
Yeah, Chrissy, I'm thinking too, just as I think about the different essays in this book, Angie, how, you know, I think Ephraim and Marshall, Lee, like they're all naming that Christianity has always been a crisis faith. And there are certain, demographics who, because of maybe their social location or because of the technological advances they've enjoyed or their affluence, et cetera, they've been maybe more insulated than others to crises, right? So they've been able to keep it at arm's distance or farther away, or they've been able to mitigate some circumstances that other people, for instance, clean drinking water, that other people have to navigate on a moment-by-moment basis. But one of the things that the last, you know, few years has done with the pandemic, and you mentioned the social and the political pressures, is that everyone's kind of feeling this now. Everyone's feeling stripped of their ordinary insulators to the difficulties of life. And I think, Angie, you mentioned just the fact that we lack maybe a practiced resiliency to know how to live faithfully there. I wonder if you can just name for us, maybe as you read through these essays and as you've reflected on your life these last few years, like what are you learning about how to be resilient in the face of crisis?
Yeah, good question. You know, one thing some of this stuff was like, we were kind of in the thick of it. Like now we're like living, okay, this stuff, life goes on in the middle, you know, but I'm going like, what are the things that I had, what's all the gunk that had been added to my life as terms of time and relationships and stuff like that? Like what futile things had I been pursuing that got stripped away that I don't want to, you know, add? So I think it's been a stripping down in a good way of that. We moved here in Denver. So we moved here in March, late March of 2020, right as things were like constantly shifting. Everything was shut down. My husband's been a pastor. We've been in pastoral ministry for 25 years. We moved here for the first time to a city where being part of a faith community was not automatic and part of a job, because we were always moving for my husband's church, you know? And so we came here in a time where we most wanted and needed community. We have friends here from before, but every church was closed. We were going to visit places, and, you know, so it's been hard also just trying to figure out how to, if you didn't have the community coming in, how do you build that in the middle of, you know, when it's, you know, not getting together, or everybody's, you know, fearful of getting together. And so I think I've felt that most acutely, just feeling like, man, I don't have a people that I belong to here. And so I think that was one of the more difficult things for me. And at the same time, I feel like I'm an introvert. I think I have a contemplative nature. So part of me was like, I think my soul went, yes, I've needed this. I didn't have to say no to everybody. It was saying everything was said no for me,
right,
you know? And so I think I just got down to a lot of kind of root essence kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question, man.
One of the other things that I, as I was looking through these essays, one of the other topics that is present here is just the assumptions that we make about God that get upended in a crisis, that are actually that actually need to be upended in a crisis. And so, as you look back on, I guess the crisis of the pandemic, what are some of those common assumptions that contemporary Christians make about who God is, especially as it relates to our experience of crisis and catastrophe?
Yeah, I think we've alluded to it before, just this idea that this tied in of like, it's not going to happen to us because God is going to protect us because we work hard or something, whatever it is. There's kind of some myth in there that, you know, we're immune. And I think we're just reminded that verse, you know, God causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, you know. So some of our myths, again, about like, well, we can be protected from this, or we can beat it, or God, I think has caused people to question, like, again, like you said, like God's goodness, like, is it, it's easy to say God's good when our life is good, you know? Right. And so what is it like though, when our life becomes challenging and even just going to the grocery store becomes a challenge, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think we tend to start like hunkering down, I think it's exposed our fear as well too. And so I think our, a myth about God. I don't know about myth about God, but I think it exposes our relationship to God as terms of fear and faith and what we're really driven by.
Yeah.
In that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So almost this like meritocratic view of God, right? That God's goodness is delivered to me because of my goodness, because of my working hard, because of, you know, that kind of thing. And that is delivered to me primarily in the accoutrements of a pleasant life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when that gets upended, you know, all of a sudden we have all these questions about who God is, which is why some of these essays are so helpful. They just return us to like, no, this is who the people of God have always been. They've always been the people who've been like in the midst of, you know, everything hitting the fan, saying they're the people who look to God and say, God, help us, you know, what the heck? sometimes, you know.
Sometimes we think that we're like the only ones. Like, no other generation has ever gone through something as terrible as this. And that's just not true. Yeah. And God has been faithful for thousands of years, right? And there have been generation after generation that have gone through difficult things. And we forget that. We think that we're different or special or whatever. And so.
Yeah, you use the word, I mean, we all the time kept using the words unprecedented, you know, like laughing about, you know, and it's like, I think, Ben, you asked like hope for the book and the series. It's like, no, this is precedented multiple times over through 2000 years plus of, you know, church history. And so what can we look, what can we take and learn from those who have gone before, from wisdom and the scripture, for Jesus' example, you know, and drawing us back to Christ.
Yeah. I have this funny thought. I mean, in some ways, you know, a global pandemic in the modern age is unique, right? So there's some unique facets to it about what's happening now. But I think you're right. When we say unprecedented over and over, like, I think the picture we get is that nobody has ever suffered as much as us, you know, and, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I have this funny, like, every time we talk about the pandemic, it'd be a fun idea to just say, in these very precedented times.
Right. You know, like, instead of in these unprecedented times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very precedented.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thinking about going forward then, Angie, you know, I think we're learning a lot. I think there's a lot of opportunity here for Christians to learn from generations past, all of that kind of thing. What would you say is the primary challenge that we're going to be facing here as Christians, as the world becomes increasingly turbulent? I think a lot of folks are looking to the future and thinking, you know, not like, oh, can't wait till everything just settles down and goes back to normal. I think most people are thinking like, I think this is the harbinger of some, a lot more turbulence, a lot more unpredictability. What would you say is the primary challenge for Christians heading into these maybe increasingly turbulent times?
I think you're right. I think most people are going, oh, this, something's changing big time. You know, it's not just a storm that we had to weather, you know, and it's not just about the pandemic, you know, it's a challenge, like how we do church, how we interact as societies. Like I was just reading an article, I think David French, about how like there's legitimate talk of a civil war in our country, you know,
it's
just like, wow, you know? And so I think this is a missional moment, you know, so I think what's the challenge is for us as Christians to not try to either pat down, smooth over, I think it's to embrace these tensions and the discomfort. And this is where I think we can be a loving prophetic voice, non-anxious presence. I think that's going to become more and more important for believers in these days. You know, I think that's what's going to potentially distinguish us when everybody else is, and a lot of Christians, well, you know, what's going on and calling for doom and gloom. So I think, you know, calling us to what our presence will be in our neighbor, not just on social media, which, you know, today as we're recording, this is down. So like Facebook and Instagram have been out for like day.
Speaking of crises, you know.
Right, exactly. I know. What are we going to do? So I think it's a call to presence in our relationship, in our, and locally, in our community, as our, you know, I'm looking at my neighborhood here in Denver, in our communities of faith. I think that's where we're going to have the greatest impact, not shouting on social media or whatever, but it's like through that rooted presence, I think.
Yeah.
That's good. I just had a Bible study in my back porch. Every Sunday night we have college kids. And we were talking just last night about how we have this opportunity, right? We have this invitation to the neighborhoods, the schools, the places that we work, to be this picture of healing and of peace and of stability because of what Jesus brings and gives to us, and to show the world that there's a different way. And so in the midst of the chaos, in the midst of what's going on, and maybe their unsettledness, we have this amazing opportunity. And I think a lot of times people are just like, I just want it to be over. But if we switched it to, okay, but it's not over. And so today I want to be present to the people around me. And what does God want to do in and through me with those people, it's just a, it is an invitation, I think. So,
and you said, Christy, you said in the midst of, I think that, you know, that's an important thing. Like, it's not, oh, I'm fine, I'm going to calm everybody. Like, it's okay to acknowledge that my life has been upended at the same time.
Yes.
And so there's a solidarity with humanity in this as well. It's not just a, I'm going to get my perfect Jesus life so then I can fix everybody else, you know, kind of thing.
There's be honest.
Yeah, acknowledging, you know, like the last chapter, Michelotis just talks about, it's like, what you're experiencing is normal, you know, and God is good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of our axioms that we teach folks in our training, and come back to a lot in our church and in our gravity leadership training, is that God is always present and at work. Mm-hmm. I think that's what both of you are speaking to here. That I think our implicit assumption behind some of the ways we think about crisis and the pandemic and political unrest and everything else that is happening right now is, once we get back to some other state, or once something new happens, then God can be on the move. Then we can get back to doing church. Then we can start discipling people again. Then maybe we can think about, you know, being a missional community again, or, you know, all of those kinds of things. And I think what I hear both of you saying is more along the lines of, no, God's present here and now in the midst of this crisis. God is working in the midst of this crisis, and the way into, I think, the resiliency that we're seeking is to take each moment of crisis, each of those things, whatever that is for us in our daily lives, and trust that God's at work, and begin to look for how God is at work in the midst of that, rather than wishing things were different so that God could be at work.
Yeah.
I think it's a fundamental imagination shift.
And it's a theological, I mean, it's the now and the not yet kind of thing. And so it's, you know, we're saying, come Lord Jesus, yes, bring an end to this. You know, my husband and I pray every day, God, eradicate COVID-19 from the world. Remove, you know, change people's hearts to end racism, all this. Yes, come Lord Jesus, and come Lord Jesus now in the midst of this.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. It doesn't, I think that's really good. Diminish the need for, because this is what we learn from the history of God's people anyway, right? Like they don't just say, oh, well, if it's happening, it must be just fine. But they actually, they cry out for God to, you know, break the arm of the wicked man, Lord, you know, and they cry out for justice and cry out for healing. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I get
Matt,
the sense.
What were you gonna say?
Yeah. I just get the sense as I think about the structure of this book and the way that these essays play off of each other is that one of the things, there's a reclamation of suffering as a regular part of the Christian existence, and as the arena in which things are learned that can't be learned otherwise. So we have this precarious or maybe dysfunctional relationship with suffering, right? So I, you know, Angie, as somebody who, I'm fond of you, Angie. I don't know if you knew that. I actually wish you well. I don't wish you to suffer, right? I'm not wishing anyone in my life that I'm fond of to suffer. But we're also seeing, especially in the chapter on what Jesus has to teach us about a crisis, that, and this is true throughout the New Testament explicitly and also in the Old Testament explicitly, but also implicitly, is that suffering happens. And it keeps happening, and the regular normal experience of Christians in the scriptures is being hard pressed. And I wonder if a crisis sort of wakes us up to the peculiarity of the relative lack of suffering that we experience, and maybe the ways that, I know it sounds scandalous to say this, but the ways that impacts our faith to our detriment.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. I think I would hope that this has opened our eyes also to be more compassionate and, I don't know the word, just to recognize the suffering of so many all the time around the world, too, instead of this kind of insulated, isolated kind of thing. You know, we all think redemptive moments or experiences are great, except when they happen to us or to our kids, right? You know,
right.
And I really think, I mean, though, you know, we look at formationally how people grow it is through that squeezing, you know, those different, doesn't have to be necessarily a huge crisis, you know, but those difficult times, those are they're always the ones that where we change and shift and can grow.
Yeah.
It's almost like that picture. What's that art where they like, it's like broken vases.
Yeah, there's that Japanese term or something where they bring it back together.
Kintsuku? I'm mispronouncing that.
They put gold all in there, and it's all one thing, but you see the gold, and it's almost like the cracks in, I mean, I'm not trying to be like churchy, but like the reality is, right? The places where I'm broken, the places where there's cracks, the places where, you know, whether it's the earth or, you know, because of a pandemic or health or whatever, it's an opportunity for God to fill that in and show himself. And that's what I want.
Yep.
Kintsugi.
And for us to love our neighbors as well.
Yeah.
Through that, fill in those gaps before them.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you just look that up, or did you just?
I did. I looked
that?
It up. I was like, wow, I didn't want to mispronounce it. Look like an idiot.
Wow.
So I just looked like an idiot for a little while.
And you're brilliant. Wow.
Totally
know the word.
Myself.
I didn't even know the word. So you smarter than me.
I'm picturing it though. Yeah.
Yeah. Kintsugi. There's a bunch of images here. Just look it up on Wikipedia. It's lovely. very good. Yes. Good. Angie, maybe to bring this to a close. I think sometimes I think there's a misconception about, like, we've been talking a lot about lament, right? A lot about suffering, a lot of these kinds of things. And I think because of our relative lack of suffering in the West, you know, especially as white people, our relative lack of suffering, our relative affluence, we tend to think of talk of suffering as like this thing that we want to avoid. We kind of have this allergy to it. And so I think there's this association that a lot of people have with suffering is like, oh, that's morbid. Mm-hmm. These people just, you know, they like feeling bad or, you know, that kind of a thing. But I found the exact opposite to be true, that as I've entered into this, into my own suffering, as I've entered into the suffering of others, as I'm able and get up the gumption, and as I've been able to engage in lament, I've actually found that the wellspring of hope is a lot deeper than it was before. Mm. So I wonder if there's a word of hope that you would want this book to communicate to people as they read it, or just a word of hope that you'd want to give to our listeners right now, just of, hey, as we embrace lament and as we embrace suffering, all these things that, you know, maybe we feel a little bit itchy about, what's the word of hope that can pull us through these experiences?
Well, a couple of things. One, to echo what you said, God's always at work. And I say that in I Am a Leader. Like, God's always at work and he never wastes anything. And I think during these times, which feel like winter to us compared to times of abundance or not as many problems, I think that's the time where we need that grounding. And that's the time where the seeds or the roots can go deeper. Mm-hmm. And I think, so that's, a hope for us that there's something that can be born out of this. Yeah. We don't, it's maybe chopped off the top of the fruit or the, you know, as ministry leaders in our personal lives, or whatever, but like, this is the rich rooted, this can be rich rooted time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's simple and profound and really helpful for me. I trust it will be for our listeners as well.
Thank you, Angie.
It's almost like when you're pruned, it's unto more fruit.
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah.
Somebody said that one time.
Yeah.
Almost like that. I mean, yeah. Angie, it's been great to have you back on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's so fun.
It is fun, Christy. Yeah, I hope we can chat next time about the kingdom and country. That'll be a fun one too.
Yeah, I know what that's like to have a, I mean, the cycle is such that you're all excited about the content, but it takes a year for the thing to get out, right?
Yeah. I just want to do a teaser for that. It's actually coming out next summer, so it's going to be pretty quick.
Okay, so pretty quick.
Turnaround, And the next one I think is going to be the least, after that will be the least of these. So looking at kind of human dignity and,
That's great. What a great bunch of topics.
So we're looking forward to it.
Angie, we'll put a link to this book in the show notes, but how, if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
My website, so angieward.net, will have all the connections you need.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
A one-stop shop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or you can study with me like Christy does at Denver
Seminary. Oh,
yeah. That'd be fun. Come on over.
Doctor of Ministry at Denver Seminary.
We're having a great time. We call it Doctor Camp. We're having a fun time.
Doctor Camp.
Doctor Camp. I'm going to think.
It's as nerdy as you'd imagine.
Yeah. Every time you talk about your studies now, Christy, I'm going to think about that. I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, you went to doctor camp this week. How was that, sweetie?
Let's see that t-shirt.
You can send her a care package.
Right.
Yeah. We have a talent show. I mean, make it a fun.
Okay. It is.
Yep.
All right. You're tempting me. Maybe I should do a doctor.
You like capture the flag at midnight, Christy? Maybe we should do that.
Throw our sticks in on Thursday night.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I only understand half of this.
We are off the rails here. We are off the rail. Typically, I'm the one that does this. How's it feel? How's it feel to be chastised?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I don't know what's happening. Thanks for reining us in, Matt.
Hey, no problem.
All right. Angie, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Good to be with you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.